United States, they do it this way.
Right, three, batter out. Oh, oh,
silly umpire, fire ass.
In Canada, they do it this way.
Right, three, batter out.
Oh,
in Mexico and Cuba, where the game also flourishes, they do it this way.
A strike, three, batter out.
Matalo, afuera. Matalo, afuera. Chino, fire, boy, dream.
In the USA, in Canada, in Mexico, in Cuba, baseball is more than an institution, more than an enthusiasm. It is an obsession. Therefore, with all due solemnity, the Columbia Workshop emphasizes that any similarity between today's story and reality is purely unintentional.
As an appropriate salute to the World Series, the Columbia Workshop, radio's foremost laboratory of new writing and production techniques, repeat by popular demand an imaginary North American crisis, The Day That Baseball Died, written by Irvin Tytle and directed by Howard G. Barnes. The Day That Baseball Died.
And now it's a riot, completely out of control. There are individual fights going on all over this ballpark, and each one is a milling, punching mass of baseball fans. All the players are slugging it out in the infield out there. It's a weaving nightmare of swinging fists and falling bodies. All the police who came pushing in just after the fateful pitch have disappeared into the middle of the mob. Now, here comes another flying wedge of police. Uh-oh, the flying wedge is down. There goes another one. Now five of the police have disappeared. This ball game will go down in history. Uh-oh, the mob has turned, and it's running in my direction. I'm going to get this microphone away from here before I... But look down!
And this can be written into the records as an eyewitness account of the rioting at that fateful baseball game, Mr. Belanger?
Yes, Your Honor. The words you have heard are mine, as recorded in our studios during the actual broadcast. Now, of course, I was greatly excited at the time, and no doubt I missed a lot of points. But in the main, am I in order, sir?
By all means, by all means. This is a special committee of inquiry into the events leading up to and the immediate cause of one of the worst riots that has ever occurred in the history of American sport. And on our findings in this courtroom, future of baseball in this country, the future of baseball in all North America, may well rest. Over 3,000 people were injured following that amazing pitch of Mr. Bisterski. And the suits against the several leagues, the owners of the baseball stadium, the soft drink concessionaire, the baseball players, and the United States of America, amount into millions of dollars. Any further information you may give us would be very valuable. I assume my colleagues in this special committee agree. You agree, Judge Wright?
Agreed.
Judge Benjamin?
Agreed.
Belanger, you have been a radio sports reporter for a good many years. What do you think is the consensus among sporting writers on that pitch that was a direct contributory cause of the riot?
Well, sir, a local newspaper polled 242 sports writers and experts. They asked them this question. Do you agree or disagree with umpire Kelly's decision?
Answer?
11 agreed, 11 disagreed, 219 undecided.
That leaves one more.
Well, he refused to answer. He gave up baseball reporting and is now a masseur in a Turkish bath establishment.
He took the dispute? Too hard?
Oh, yes, but he's not the only one. This question has split the baseball world down the center, lengthwise, crosswise, and at the seam. It's hard for me to talk so calmly about it. As your honors are aware, the man who umpired at the game, one of the finest in the business, committed suicide the day after. He just couldn't stand the doubt in his own mind.
Fortunate. Mr. Belanger, what is your opinion of that last inning? To which ball club should the game have been awarded?
Your Honor, Now, if the court doesn't mind, I'd rather not say.
The committee will not insist on your answering that question. The hearing is now adjourned until 2:30 this afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have presented on this radio series in the past the romantic, the dramatic, the bizarre, and the mysterious. We have brought to the microphone men who work thousands of feet under the sea and men who have sped through the stratosphere. On this program, you heard a man who saw and spoke to a ghost and a woman who could make rain fall anywhere at any time of year. Standing beside me now is the central figure in the most momentous sports dispute in history. The man whose right arm touched off a riot in New York, a panic in baseball, and a committee of inquiry. The sensational picture of the celebrated Green Sox, Red Beth Berkey. Red, how long have you been playing baseball?
I've been playing...
Oh, Red, mind coming a little closer to the mic?
Yes. I've been playing ball for 8 years.
Red, how long did it take you to perfect your original knuckle-duster pitch that was the sensation of the league at the beginning of the season?
I worked on it for about 6 years before I was confident enough to use it in a professional game.
And when you introduced it in the opening game of the season, you told reporters it was Knuckle Duster the first. Did you have an idea that you could improve on it?
Well, I believe that with another 2 years' practice, I'd have a really sensational pitch.
And your idea worked out?
Better than I ever dreamed. I was able to use Knuckle Duster the second for the first time in the last inning of the deciding game of the World Series.
With the result that in the riot that followed, over 3,000 people were injured. All baseball leagues in the United States, Canada, Mexico, and Cuba have indefinitely suspended all schedules. And the shadow of Knuckle Duster the Second hangs over the historic courtroom in Washington, where the committee of inquiry into that game and riot is in session at this very moment. Red, by court injunction, you cannot toss another Knuckle Duster pending the outcome of the inquiry.
That's right, Mr. Simpson.
But there's nothing to prevent you showing me how to throw it. I have here, oh, thank you, a standard baseball as approved by 14 different leagues, exactly 60 and a half feet away down the center aisle of this radio studio, the Detroit Lion catcher, Mike Malloy, is waiting for my pitch. Now, Red, will you show me how to hold the ball so that I can be the second man in the world to throw the famous knuckle duster?
Well, Mr. Simpson, I don't know whether you can wrap your fingers around the ball like I can. You see, practice has made my middle two fingers grow almost half an inch. And then there's something else that
I'll do my best if you show me.
But, Mr. Simpson, there's another thing.
A studio audience of 600 people and a radio audience of over 30 million are waiting for this very moment when the second knuckle duster, the second in all history, is to be thrown. The Mexican and Cuban embassies have sent observers. You're not going to disappoint all those lovers of baseball.
It isn't that, Mr. Simpson. It's just that...
Are you with me, folks?
Yeah! All right, if you're willing, I'm willing. But it's dangerous.
I'll risk it for my sponsor's sake.
Well, get the ball well in the heel of your hand.
Yes, Red.
That's right. Now spread these two fingers back around.
Like
no,
this?
No, back a little farther. That's right. Now your thumb goes under here.
Yes?
Way under here.
Huh?
Now, your index finger lies along... two fingers have slipped. You have to bend them back just a little farther. Back, Mr. Simpson.
No! You've broken my fingers!
That's what I meant to tell you, sir. I broke my finger 6 times before I could throw a knuckle duster in a second.
This is Belanger again. As you know, I was at the microphone in the ballpark giving the radio play-by-play on that fateful day when Red first hurled his knuckle duster the second, the pitch that has threatened to revolutionize and perhaps to destroy our national sport. Well, a word now about the incident when that rather self-assured radio master of ceremonies attempted to imitate the knuckle duster pitch and broke his fingers in the process. After that sensational occurrence, there was a new burst of inflammatory newspaper headlines, and again the continent was split asunder by contradictory opinions.
This is the question. Can baseball exist with the threat of the knuckle duster the second hanging like a sword of Damocles over its head?
Red Bastersky should be banned from organized ball for life.
I'm a sports writer for the Evening Monsoon. I'll never watch another game as long as I live. What I saw convinced me. There's no solution. Red Bastersky worked for 6 years before he perfected that ball, and to ban a man from the game just because he worked so hard would be criminal. And anyway, what's to prevent other pitchers, now that they know it's possible, from trying to imitate it? And unless you rewrite baseball's codes and hedge it around with restrictions, which would ruin the game in any event, you cannot ban the knuckle duster, and you cannot continue playing the game with it.
I resigned a week ago as president of the league. You'll have to excuse me if I don't talk too clearly. I'm just recovering from a fracture of the lower jaw. I was at that game, too. I agree in part with what some of the sports writers have said, except that I believe that the game of baseball could be modified, say, to eliminate the pitcher. Now, shape of the bat could be changed to make it more like a golf club, and the second baseman could roll the ball along the ground at the batter. Now, I'm going to start working out the details for an entirely new game, a substitute for baseball, as soon as they take the cast off my right arm.
Meanwhile, the Committee of Inquiry, composed of three judges of the highest integrity, continued its investigation.
Now, there will be no demonstration, please, during the hearing. Mr. Hemingway, you are the chief umpire of the league.
That's right, Your Honor.
Were you in agreement with the decision of the late umpire Kelly that preceded the riot in New York?
Your Honor, I can say this. I would have acted the same way.
Though you don't agree with it now?
Well, I really can't answer that question, Your Honor. It's too serious.
Mr. Hemingway, I understand you officiated as umpire in the opening game of the season when Mr. Bisterski introduced what he called Knuckle Duster the First.
Yes, sir.
The immediate predecessor of Knuckle Duster the Second. Do you recall that game?
Certainly. Perfectly. I was standing behind the plate during that first pitch, and I was so surprised I could hardly call it. You see, in order to hit the ball, which was Red Bisterski's specialty, a batter must start a swing about a split second after the ball leaves the pitcher's hand, so that he uncurls almost automatically as the pitcher's arm flashes down.
So that if some way could be found of slowing the ball en route, the batter would tend to swing anyway.
Yeah, and he'd realize at exactly the same split second that he shouldn't swing that early. And with his body trying to go in two directions at once, serious things might happen. I'll never forget that pitch. The game was about to start.
Red Bisterski, glancing around the infield, looked very calm and cool, considering the first pitch of the first game of the season is coming up. You know, fans, I can't make up my mind whether the announcement he made about using some fancy pitch that he calls the Knuckle Duster the First is a gag or not. Whatever it is, boy, it better be good or he's in for a lot of ribbing from those bleachers. Now, there he goes, pounding the ball into his glove. Now, here comes his famous speedball windup. His arm goes round and round. He's gathering speed. He's up on his toes. And here's the pitch. Oh, boy, what a slow ball. Butch Taylor swung. No, he didn't. He was going to swing, then he stopped, and he fell, and he's crumpled on the ground there. The stands are in an uproar. They've just seen the unveiling of the Knuckle Duster the First.
You say the batter swung. Did he...
He broke his back. The second man up got so rattled he threw the batter for Stoisky and was expelled from the game. The third batter struck out. The Green Sox won that game 28-0.
Was the Knuckle Duster the First a success with it had all through the season?
Bisterski won his first eight games with it, until some hitters caught on. You see, it was very surprising at first, because Red was a fastball pitcher, and with the Knuckle Duster, he had an amazing change of pace. But towards the end of the season, and in the first part of the series, he didn't do so hot.
And it was then that he introduced Knuckle Duster the Second?
He was called in as a relief pitcher in the last part of the last inning of the deciding game of the World Series. Red side was leading by one run. The bases were loaded with two men out. In order to win the series, Your Honor, and that means $5,000 extra for each man on his team, Bisterski had to strike out the batter who faced him. The count was 3-2. Everything depended on that last pitch. I heard a rumor about a Knuckle Duster to the Second, but I didn't think he'd use it this season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I looked at him through my field glasses, I saw Red half turned to a third base. His fiancée was sitting in a box just beyond it. And I saw him hold up two fingers.
Mm-hmm. And that indicated to you?
That the next pitch was going to be a Knuckle Duster the Second.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hemingway. Any questions from the other members of the committee?
Yes, Mr. Hemingway. Are you still chief umpire for the league?
Yes, Your Honor. But my resignation from that position becomes effective tomorrow. I'm going to be a traveler in ladies and misses ready to wear.
I beg your pardon, Miss Wilson.
Yes?
I'm from the Daily Blaze.
Oh.
Will you tell, how does it feel to be the fiancé of the most famous man in the athletic world?
Oh. Well, it feels the same as it did when we became engaged 5 months ago. It's wonderful.
Well, has the amazing game at New York interfered with your marriage plans at all?
Oh, it certainly has. We were just talking about that the other night, and Red was saying that if he hadn't tried that knuckle duster the second, we would have been married by now.
I see. Well, are you sorry he did, Miss Wilson?
Oh, no, not at all. After all, it was the most important moment of the season, and we'd worked so hard on that ball for so long.
Uh-huh. Miss Wilson, did you ever see Red actually practicing the knuckle duster the second?
Never. You see, we have a large backyard, and Red had it fenced in and lighted.
Uh-huh.
Nobody was allowed near the place while Red was practicing. Dad used to patrol the outside with a shotgun.
You say he had lights in it. Did he practice at night, too?
Oh, my, yes. Often he'd call for me to go to a movie, and suddenly he'd snap his fingers and say the wind was just right, and he had an idea, and did I mind. And he'd disappear into the backyard, and Pop would get his shotgun, and I'd get my knitting.
Miss Wilson, did you know before the game that Red might use the new knuckle duster?
No, I didn't. I didn't think he had it ready to use.
But at the inquiry yesterday, the former chief umpire said in evidence that just before that final pitch, he saw Red turn to you and hold up two fingers. Wasn't that an indication?
Oh, I saw him do that all right. Well, that means something entirely different to me. You see, I'm a junior grade school teacher.
Passions ran high throughout the country. Gallup poll canvassers attempting to poll on the issue were attacked by fans who resented the wording of the question. In your opinion, was umpire Kelly correct in his decision? And a court injunction has been filed restraining any further sampling of public opinion as an incitement to disturb the public peace. A group of baseball tycoons, foreseeing the end of baseball, formed a syndicate to import cricket, England's national game. The situation was pretty depressing. The committee of inquiry droned on.
Next witness, please.
Your name is Vester Malasky, and you're a first baseman.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You were the last man at bat in the last half of the ninth inning of the last and deciding game of the series?
Yes, Your Honor. I was the first man in baseball history to face a knuckle duster the second.
Hmm. Mr. Malasky, I understand you are the league leading batter.
Uh-huh.
You have the highest batting average, most home runs and so on. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I also have most triples and tied for the most runs batted in.
Quite. Mr. Malasky, had you ever been stricken out, if that's the correct term, by Mr. Baterski?
Well, Red struck me out 5 times at the beginning of the season. That was when he started using the original knuckle duster. Since then, though, I've been hitting him all the time. He wouldn't dare use that knuckle duster the first on me lately.
Then when the count reached 2 strikes and 3 balls, Mr. Baterski found himself between Silla and Charybdis.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. He was in a hole. If he walked me, the tie and run would be forced in and there'd still be 3 men on base. He had to either give me his fastball and take a chance on me hitting it out of the old ballpark, or else try something else.
So he tried something else. Mr. Malasky, consider this question carefully before you answer. Some split second after he pitched the ball, did you hear umpire Kelly shout, "You're out"?
I did not. And in any case, Your Honor, Kelly had no business shouting anything before
Your Honor, I represent the interests of the relatives of the deceased Mr. Kelly. And I object to the witness casting any reflections on the merits of Mr. Kelly's decision that will be read into the record. There are many actions pertaining to the game and hinging on that particular point of the game that are now pending in the courts of the country. And a biased opinion at this point might unnecessarily prejudice sentiment.
Your objection is well made, Mr. Tandon. Court stenographer will erase my question and Mr. Malasky's answer from the court record. Mr. Malasky, there are several questions that this court is trying to get answered in the course of this inquiry. Now, according to normal baseball rules and customs, was Mr. Baterski's pitch illegal? And did its illegality touch off the riot? Or was it legal, but of such a nature as to endanger the public peace?
Or did Mr. Kelly's decision and reversal of decision precipitate the disturbances? In the light of these questions, Mr. Malasky, can you tell us briefly everything you remember from the time you assumed batting position?
Sure, certainly. There were three men on base, and Bestorsky was taking his time pitching, and after I fouled a couple and let a couple of others go. Some of the dirt out of my cleats with the handle of my bat. Red stood there for a minute, pounding his glove. Then he looked toward third base and held up two fingers. Then he started his windup. I braced myself and dug my heel in the dirt, and I could hear that crowd going crazy. I saw the ball leave his hand as he came out of the windup, and then I...
Your Honor.
Yes?
Your Honor, I represent the interests of the owners of the baseball stadium. And I feel it would be highly prejudicial to my client's interest to introduce an oral account of the next few seconds into the record by a participant in the game. We have, as one of the exhibits, an impartial eyewitness account of those few seconds as broadcast by Hewitt Belanger and recorded in the radio studio. I respectfully submit that that is the count that should go into the court record.
Agreed? Court stenographer will eliminate the latter part of Mr. Malasky's testimony. The witness is excused. Court is adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow. Court adjourned. And then it happened. The Bobby Soxers discovered Red the Thirsty. Suddenly, they put him in their gallery of heroes in every juke joint, in every ice cream parlor, wherever Bobber Soxers gathered. All over the country, it was Frankie, Van, Bing, and Red the Thirsty, the big four.
As a scientist, I have been asked to give a simple scientific explanation. Now, when an object is thrown parallel with the horizontal, with considerable velocity, there are three main forces acting on it simultaneously. The force of X imparted by the arm, the force G, otherwise gravity, acting at right angles to X, and force Y, which is the air resistance in the path of the object. In order, therefore, to reach the given conclusion demonstrated so ably by Mr. Bestorsky, the forces X and Y, in conjunction with other factors, should total in effect, or rather effect in total at a given moment in time, or rather a force equal and opposite to force G and any other forces. Starting again. What I mean is that the forces acting along the line of flight, I should say, of course, against the line of flight, well, actually, what I really mean, oh, nuts, I don't know how he did it.
Mr. Bestorsky, we resume my hearing. Is it so that before the game you had no intention of using the, knuckle duster the second?
That's right, sir. But I walked into a tough spot in the last inning, and I had to use it with a count 3-2 on the most dangerous hitter in the league.
And you signaled that decision to your fiancé?
No, sir. When I put up two fingers, I was testing the strength and direction of the wind. That determined exactly which way I had to grip the ball and the speed with which I had to throw it.
Did you hear umpire Kelly's decision?
I not only heard him, I saw him wave his thumb upwards, meaning a strikeout. And that was when I threw down my glove and jumped into the air. We had just won the series, and that was my natural reaction.
Thank you, Mr. Bestorsky. There are no questions from my colleagues?
No questions? No questions.
The witness is excused. We are now ready to hear a further recorded description of the actual pitch, as described at the actual moment in a radio broadcast by Mr. Hewitt Belanger. By agreement of counsel, this is admitted in evidence. You please, Exhibit 109...
balance on this next pitch. The tension in the stadium is terrific. With the count 3-2 on the league's leading batter, three men on and two out, Bestorsky is taking his time. He seems to have made his decision now. He faces toward third, and he holds up two fingers like a Boy Scout testing the wind.
Now, Red's beginning his speedball windup. His arm is going around, round, gathering speed. And here comes the pitch. Mulaski swings. Oh, what a fastball. I didn't even see it go over the plate, and I don't think anybody did. But it's a strikeout, and the Green Sox win the series. And they're throwing down their gloves, and they're dancing in the infield.
Here. I can see it, but I don't believe it. I can't believe it. The ball hasn't reached the plate yet. I've got my glasses on it, and I can see it. It stopped in midair about 3 feet in front of the batter, spinning slowly around, but staying in the same place. Oh, what a pitch! A fastball until it comes near the plate, and then it stops in midair. Mulaski has thrown down his bat. He's turned to the dugout, but his teammates now are screaming at him, pointing at the ball, hovering near the plate there. Mulaski is whirling around. He picks up the bat. He's squaring at that spinning ball, and he hits it weakly. He's rolling to the infield, but those fielders, they're dancing around. They don't see it. Umpire Kelly is shouting. He's reversing his decision. He says it's a hit, and now the tying and the winning runs are crossing the plate, and the Falcons have won. Or have they? The umpire is tearing at his hair. He's still shouting. Is he changing his mind again? The crowd is pouring out on the field now. All the players on the field are swinging bats. And now it's a riot that's completely out of control.
Thank you. That is all we need here. The committee will now retire to formulate its final recommendation. We stand adjourned.
While the learned judges pondered the problem, the people argued in schools and clubs, offices and saloons, in stores, in banks and shops, who won the game? Should Knuckle Duster II be outlawed? Is baseball dead, killed by its own atomic bomb? The Daily Proletarian said,
reactionary pitcher dooms sport of masses.
The Chicago Republican headlined,
red pitcher sabotages baseball.
The people said,
listen, the batter swung and missed the ball. A strikeout. The Great Sox won a game.
You're crazy. The ball never crossed the plate. The batter can do what he likes before the ball comes over the plate. It came over and he hit it. Any idiot can see that the Falcons won.
Well, I'm not an idiot. He swung and missed, didn't he?
He couldn't have missed it. The ball hadn't reached him.
He swung and missed, and the umpire called him out.
Then he reversed his decision. He saw he was wrong.
On my foot. You're crazy. Boy, if you weren't my brother-in-law...
My sister was idiotic enough to marry Elaine Brinkley.
Don't leave my wife out of this, or I'll skip you.
And other people said,
what's the use of trying to play baseball if one guy can make a ball go like lightning for 60 feet and then make it stop dead? Them poor batters will all go crazy. They all play without a pitcher.
I once saw a game of cricket, and they bounced the ball. If they made this, Professor Duvatti couldn't put that anti-gravity spin on it.
Anyway, there's still hockey in the wintertime.
For my money, they can play the game over again.
In 7 days, our nation boiled and simmered, the Committee of Inquiry deliberated. And then on the eighth day, in front of newspaper reporters, diplomats, foreign correspondents, feature writers, cameramen, and batteries of microphones, the learned justice, clearing his throat, announced...
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a dramatic presentation of the Columbia Workshop.
Those responsible for today's broadcast are as follows. The writer, Irvin Title. The Columbia Workshop director, Howard G. Barnes. Members of the cast included Bill Slater as Belanger, Santos Ortega as the Justice, and Art Carney as Red Bisterski. Next week, the Columbia Workshop will present Studies in Jealousy by Jenny O'Brien. Meanwhile, stay tuned to CBS for the Larry Lester news program, which follows. Don Baker speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.